From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Father's Day weekend 2019. Polish Fest is happening this weekend at Summerfest Grounds, and the Brewers are out of town all week. Speaking of Father's Day, Americans will spend $15 billion on Dad, which is about $10 billion less than we spend on Mom. But I'm not bitter. Here's a story about governmental bureaucracy. One of the most popular tourist attractions in all of Spain, the Basilica La Sagrada Familia, has finally been granted a building permit by the city of Barcelona, after 137 years. Along with the permit, city authorities have assessed this church a $41 million construction fee. Tell me again why politicians get such a bad rap. Finally, you can skip the keto diet, Weight Watchers, and Jenny Craig. A New York Post headline read, "Sleeping with the TV on can cause you to gain weight, especially if you're watching the Food Network. So just change channels and lose that weight. Or you can watch a lot of Seinfeld reruns." In the studio today, we've got Brian Kilb, Kyle Tedding, Paige Radke, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Jason. Second week in a row of gains for the market. NASDAQ up 0.7% this week, adding 55 points to close at 77.97. The S&P 500 tacked on a 0.5% gain for the week, up 14 points to close at 28.87. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 107 points this week, a 0.4% advance. We close at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 26,091. Pretty decent year so far. NASDAQ up a whopping 18%. S&P with dividends is up 16.3%. And the Dow is up 13.1%. You know, Kyle, we've now basically recovered the 6.6% loss that stocks experienced in May. All started on June 4th. Jay Powell, the head of the Fed, said that they were monitoring the trade wars and would respond if necessary. The street took that as the next change in rates is perhaps to lower them, and stocks were off to the races again.
You know, and I think it's so interesting to see that, you know, you get the first few months of the year, the market really just runs higher after what had been a pretty weak fourth quarter, and then you get that May and really some cracks starting to appear. And, you know, none of that has disappeared. I think that the big shift has been, as you mentioned, that, you know, you potentially have some tailwinds from the Fed if they do act to support markets, if they do act to maybe allow growth to continue a little bit longer here. And so, you know, I think we so often are in fear of what the Fed's going to do, and it's been encouraging to see some news that maybe the Fed's going to act to bolster growth a little bit from here.
So it truly is about interest rates and earnings. Interest rates are heading lower. Earnings are a little bit different story. You know, if you look at the current quarter, they're forecasting about a 5% increase in revenue growth with no increase in earnings. Long term, that's a problem. Should that continue?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, I think the markets have already looked past these next few quarters when you look at the run that we've had so far. And so, you know, we can't quite say that it's, you know, it's completely priced out already. But, you know, when you look past the first couple of quarters of this year, you're talking about, again, double-digit earnings growth looking into 2019 or looking into 2020 and, you know, maybe close to that looking into 2021, and really early right now to say that that's a hard number you should hang your hat on. And yet at the same time, I think, you know, given that we've paused here in terms of earnings growth, the comparisons year over year should be a little bit easier as we go forward.
Kyle, as you know, economists are terrible at forecasting recession, but they are able to talk about trend lines, and things are clearly slowing. If you look at GDP last year, 2.9%, they think GDP could be about 2.2, maybe 2.1% this year, barely 1% next year. You wrote an article for the newsletter that goes out next week in which, among other things, you talked about how growth is slowing, not only in the United States, but overseas as well.
Yeah, you know, I think it's fair to point out that when you look at items like big-ticket purchases, that we're seeing, you know, growth slow down there. I think the one challenge is it's not fair to say yet, for the most part, that we're decelerating. It's not fair to say that we've slammed on the brakes in terms of growth. What it is fair to say is that, You know, while we're still growing, maybe we're not growing as quickly as we have. And so, you know, that's being recognized by automakers, for example, who have now announced some layoffs. It's being recognized in home sales numbers. It's being recognized in retail sales where, you know, the growth is there. It's maybe just not there to the same extent it was in the past. And, you know, as you mentioned, very difficult to predict when that recession is going to come. But you can look at the trend lines and you can say that, you know, growth isn't what it was last year. And so as an investor, we have to adjust our expectations accordingly. And certainly I think that means that, you know, the potential for earnings growth, the potential for rates to come down a little bit from here, you know, those are all things that have to be priced in.
Brian, let's bring you into the program. What's your take on current events?
You know, I'm thinking about this conversation right now. I'm kind of thinking a little bit about the difference between, you know, as we assess risk in our portfolios, between being afraid and being perhaps less optimistic. You know, if Kyle, I think about your comments about slowing growth. It may not be that you have to run away from stocks because you're afraid something bad's going to happen. I think, you know, what's the word people have used? The economy is pretty sturdy right now. But I do think when you take risk in stock, you want to get paid for it, and perhaps the upside is not looking as good right now, and maybe taking a little bit of risk off the table is an appreciation of maybe a slowing opportunity set on the good side, not necessarily just more fear or being afraid of a significant pullback.
Well, Brian, as you know, in many, many cases, when they declare that we're in a recession, the recession has been going on for months. And by the time the average person realizes we're in a recession, they're half over. Stocks typically start recovering in the third quarter, if you will, of a recession. So there's just not a whole lot of time out there. But it's interesting to see the slowdown in manufacturing. You know, that one's caught my attention. Manufacturing's dropped 0.4% a month for the first 4 months. You know, I came across a statistic that I saw in this morning's New York Times that the United States lost 6 million manufacturing jobs from 2000 to 2010. It's only regained 1.5 million manufacturing jobs since then. That's a big number. So you see the decline in manufacturing. You see oil prices plunging down 20% since April. You know, that tells me slower growth, but mark my words, in maybe 3 or 4 months, you'll start reading about whether we're going to have a soft landing or not. And folks, what we're talking about here is GDP. It doesn't go negative, but it goes lower, and then all of a sudden we reaccelerate. But it's important to know the trend. I think it's important to know that things are slowing. It's not necessarily doom and gloom, but everybody's patiently waiting for earnings to rebound in the fourth quarter. You know, Joel, I noticed in information that you sent us that they're already reducing their estimates for fourth quarter growth. You know, just a month ago, we were talking about 8%. Now they're talking just a whisker above 6%. So pretty good lower revision in a fairly short period of time for that. So I think it's important to, you know, put this all in context. Paige, why don't you chime in here? What's your take on things these days?
Yeah, so, you know, we've touched on a lot of things, earnings, interest rates. But one thing that I've been sort of keeping my eye on is just monetary and fiscal policy. So as you know, monetary policy is controlled by the Federal Reserve, and that controls the money supply, whereas fiscal policy is controlled by the government, and that's more so how the money is being spent. Typically, what you like to see is fiscal policy and monetary policy working together. That's the ideal situation. But coming out of the recession, we put a lot of that weight on monetary policy, sort of helping that push us through the recovery. And then, you know, all of a sudden we had interest rates going up again, which is a contractionary monetary policy. Well, at the same time, we had fiscal policy, which was expansionary with that tax rate cut. So once again, we're seeing them diverge. They're not going in the same direction. Now we have fiscal policy, which is contractionary with the tariffs, and we're looking at monetary policy to become expansionary as we start to put them back down. So I'm just really keeping an eye on those two different components of what's controlling the economy, and I'd really like to see those start working together again rather than against each other.
So take that a step further. If you think of the Fed typically lowering interest rates 500 basis points, 5 percentage points, to get us out of recession. The overnight rate now in a range between 2.25, 2.5. We don't have the ability to lower 5 full percentage points. And on the fiscal policy side, pretty difficult to imagine how they're going to spend even more money with tax revenues falling quite a bit because of the corporate tax rate cuts that the president signed in December 17. So, you know, the pros are now suggesting that, you know, limited ability in monetary and fiscal policy to help much in the next recession, which in English means they're just going to have to let the storm blow through. And the good news, I think, is that I think the next recession could be somewhat milder because we didn't build up the excesses. Bad news, as you precisely point out, that we lack the monetary and fiscal policy response.
Yeah, and I think some of that confusion might be seen in the difference between the way the bond market's representing things and the way the stock market's representing things. I mean, the bond market's telling you there's all kinds of problems, and stocks, I think, for many of the worries of the day, have held up pretty well, you know, so kind of a state of conflict or state of confusion a little bit.
Well, Brian, even within the bond market, you're getting some confusion now. You've seen the spreads on higher quality bonds start to come down from their start of June peak the last, 2 weeks now. You know, we had peaked at high yield spreads at 4.7%. We're back down to about 4.2 right now. And so, you know, investors are strangely willing to take more risk in an area of the market that really isn't compensating them to take that risk. And that's not a trade that for our investors I'd really recommend. But, you know, I think there are a lot of people out there that continue to stretch for yield, that continue to stretch for a little bit of extra income. And, you know, I think, as you say, the bond market in terms of rates is maybe signaling some cause for concern. But in terms of spreads, in terms of what people are willing to pay for levels of risk in bonds, you know, it looks very similar to the equity market right now.
You know, Kyle, that kind of circles back to the stock conversation, right? I think when it's not just what risk are you taking, but what do you hope to get paid for that risk? And in these days, even if you take a little bit more risk, there may not be the upside, whether it be in bonds or stocks, to justify that risk.
Joel, let's bring you into the show. Pretty good inflation news that came out. Core prices just up 0.1%. Headline CPI up 0.1%. The personal consumption expenditure indicator number that came out in the GDP report up only 1.6 year over year. Pretty low inflation readings.
Yeah, Bob. We also had the capacity utilization rate that came out today, and that's sort of an earlier indication of inflation, and that's remained below the average since 1972. It's remained below that average since 2008, since the financial crisis. So it's really telling us that there doesn't seem to be any imminent concern of inflation, even in the pipeline.
You know, I read, thanks to Capital Economics, that they think that higher tariffs will put modest pressure on the price of imported goods, but they should be offset by the stronger dollar and a sharp drop in commodities prices, particularly oil, as I mentioned, down 20% since April.
It's interesting, too, because there was a number that came out today from the Consumer Sentiment Survey from the University of Michigan, and they're finding that tariffs are actually maybe motivating consumers to buy appliances sooner than they would have otherwise, just because they're anticipating the prices going up because of tariffs.
You know, I think one of the more encouraging things that I've seen this spring has been an increase in productivity. Just finished a meeting with a client that ran a pretty good-sized manufacturing facility. And, you know, they talked about this confluence, if you will, of it being so hard to find help, particularly on a factory floor, with the push towards artificial intelligence, robotics, to streamline operations. And, you know, his comment was, it's not so much that we all believe in robotics, but we can't find the help that we need, so we're being forced to do it. And, you know, folks, what we're talking about here is output per man hour worked. The analogy I always talk about, of course, is how many pens can you make an hour? And it was just anemic for years and years and years and years. Janet Yellen, former head of the Fed, I think in a very refreshing way, said they didn't understand why it wasn't going up. And so now finally you're seeing productivity rates in the 2.5, 2.6% range. Somewhat anecdotal, it's only been 3 months that the rates picked up. But if there's a bright spot on the horizon, that's clearly it, because productivity increases drops right into the bottom line, and will have a significant impact on earnings at some point down the road.
And Bob, I think it's important to point out that often in order to increase productivity, it requires corporate spending. And so for many of the smaller businesses out there, maybe they don't have the capital or access to the capital to have those kind of outlays. And still you see some pretty strong hiring from a lot of those businesses, and they're seeing the burden of not being able to find those workers. But for the bigger businesses, the ones that can afford some of that spending in robotics or in other areas to increase productivity, that's the kind of stuff that can really drive GDP growth. And long term, it creates new jobs in areas that we hadn't envisioned in the past, you know, whether it's to service that new equipment or whether it's to develop that new equipment. You know, that's how you evolve an economy. That's how you continue to grow. And that's why that productivity number becomes so important.
And Kyle, actually, you know, and maybe it's the lack of workers now that's going to motivate some companies to, you know, get off the dime and to spend some of that money on productivity. There were numbers that came out this week that showed in April that we had a record number of, we had job postings that outnumbered the number of people available, you know, looking for work by 1.6 million. There were 1.6 million more job postings than people looking for work.
You know, Joel, you made the same point I was going to make, that typically when you look at weak data on growth, inflation, employment, doesn't necessarily encourage somebody to spend money to buy a company or to expand an operation. But I think that the inability to hire, as you point out, could be the impetus. And how very different that is from past business cycles. And that'd be great if that's what sparked capital spending moving forward.
You know, and I think if you kind of tie that thought into the thought that consumers have been spending at an adequate rate and that people are employed and perhaps wages continue to climb, corporate cash is at a three-year low now because they're spending some money. It's really hard to imagine the economy getting too awful bad too quick if businesses are spending money and people are spending money. So that might provide some reassuring floor for the economy and things moving forward.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoy doing the program. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.